Good morning, KINS. It's, what, the day before the day before?
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve.
Yes, joining us is the guy who normally was here the week before, Fred Van Fleck.
Right. Well, I was here the week before.
You were.
I was. And you told me back. I was a week early.
I think Winston almost passed out when he saw you out in the lobby.
Don't put this on me. You're
kind
the
of
one who
that's my response every time I see you. So,
I just thought you were going to have me on twice because I had it in my calendar last week and this week both, and I just go where my calendar tells me. So, yeah, no, I recognize that laugh.
Yeah, like, good. Okay.
Heck no, you're not going on this show twice. What are you talking about?
All right, are you ready for your question here?
No.
Good. You're going to get it. Well, there's another one that was kind of. It's funny how some things get outmoded. I could explain that term and the reference to that body part.
Yes, yes.
But I won't.
Okay.
Because I was told cheesecake was kind of pushing the edge.
Well, the two are related.
That's right. That's right. Okay, fire eater. Why do we say fire eater?
Boy, I don't know. So I think fire eaters originated from Polynesian culture. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I think that's accurate.
You're half a world away.
Okay. Half a world away, huh? Yeah. Okay. Well, they migrated there.
Save your agony?
Just save my agony because okay. I have no idea. It has to, you know, I just don't know. I can't tell you.
In many cultures, people have experimented with swallowing smoke and flames. European showmen of the 17th century managed to convince onlookers that they actually ate glowing coals. Keen interest in the exploits of fire eaters who flourished in that era led to the wide use of their name in other circumstances. It was initially applied to bullies who were so fond of fighting that they were willing to face danger. Later, the term was associated with any person quick and eager at work, going at it with the relish of a performer showed in eating fire.
Well, I'm really disappointed. Because the luau I went to in Hawaii, they said they originated the fire eating.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so somebody's wrong.
And you couldn't remember that two minutes ago?
Well, I said Polynesian.
Yeah, where's Polynesia?
Well, around there.
Geography was your long suit, wasn't it? I hope finance is a little bit stronger on the list.
That adds up.
Yes, it does. Oh, I'm sure you've had a lot of people ask you questions about some of the current news stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
But with this, and I forget what it is, basically that America is built on the backs of minorities and that white is... What's that phrase? Fred, you must know what it is because you get questioned about it.
Which phrase? White privilege?
Yeah, and the whole... Not jargon, but I guess the educational model reinforcing that perspective.
Of building equity?
Yeah, well, the Europeans were all the bad guys and, et cetera, et cetera. How do you know that that's not being taught in the classroom?
Well,
or reinforced. Maybe it's not being taught, but reinforced.
Well, I can certainly say that is not what is endorsed or adopted by the school district. We have a curriculum that is brought to us by the state of California and based on state standards, and we have a limited selection of curriculum that we get to choose from. Now, that being said, teachers are not supposed to bring their own political belief into the classroom or anything like that. There's been
But that's like saying you and I can't. You know, the words that we choose, the inflections we use. I mean, there are so many different ways, nonverbal as well as the verbal, or intentional versus unintentional, or, it seeps in. I mean, it does. It's part of what makes people people.
Right.
Is our perspectives, our beliefs, and our attitudes. But to try to keep it in that between the lines, so to speak.
And I would say that for the most part, our teachers do a good job of that. The one thing that's forgotten is teachers don't have a First Amendment right inside the classroom. And that's the law. And it's really interesting to think about that. And let me rephrase that. They have a First Amendment right, but their First Amendment right is limited. Limited to the fact, for instance, they couldn't, one of the hot topic buttons right now is like Black Lives Matter. There's a lot of folks out there that are
have really opinions one absolutely. Side or the other, and we'll talk about some of those because we have opinions too when we come back.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City School Superintendent. Fred, before the break, you were talking about Black Lives Matter. I was kind of reflecting as I was doing a little bit of cleanup this morning here at the shop about what kind of year this has been. You know, some of the accomplishments, some of the challenges, just some of the things that are going on inside the walls, inside the county, nationally. It's been interesting. The Black Lives Matter, it has faded from view with a lot of folks because of whatever you want to point to. But it's also ingrained in a lot of things now that perhaps a lot of us don't think about. You were referencing some of the points of view and perspectives that are able to be in the classroom and those that aren't. And I would suspect that current events classes are kind of a set aside from that.
Yeah, sure, if it's a part of the curriculum and you're teaching about
or just you're having discussions about.
Correct.
You know, if you had a debate class, okay, take one side, and you know, let's have a nice civil debate.
Right. I mean, prime classes for those U.S. history, government, those sorts of things. I mean, absolute topics that belong inside those classrooms, taught balanced with both sides.
Yeah, both sides being represented. But in English Lit, maybe not.
Right. I mean,
or math or physics.
English, potentially, if you're the genre you're talking about is persuasive, and you're writing persuasive papers or something along those
lines. A module, but not day in and day out.
Right.
And I suspect that that's the concern. And that's some of the examples that we've been seeing popping up, you know, whether it's politically based or I guess the other one that seems to get everybody's ire right now is the sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. California's an interesting state when it comes to that one and the laws on sexual orientation and locker rooms and restrooms and the whole nine yards.
Preaching from the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
And the persuasion that is being reported in a number of areas. How do you keep that stuff in balance? I know you wander the campuses and you pop in and you see what's going on, but is there any sure way that you really know what's going on short of having little cameras in each of the classrooms and having tape, so if somebody ever says, you know, my kid came home last week and said, da-na-na-na-na-na, and you go back and review the film.
So when you say keep it in balance, is that in the perspective of a progressive Democrat, or is that in the perspective of an ultra-conservative Republican? And so this idea of keeping it in balance is...
I would think that's the
really
school board's determination.
Yeah, you know, I would tend to agree. And the states, really, it's even beyond the school board.
And the parents' perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. But each parent's going to have a different perspective. But where the local school board is really tied in their opinion and what they think is that the state tells us, here is what you'll teach. Here is the adopted curriculum that you have the choices to choose from in each of the different
areas. But not how it'll be taught.
That is correct. Not how it'll be taught. Yep.
I think that's probably where a lot of the angst and concern and frustration and fear is.
Right. Right. And what the law says is, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is the First Amendment right, and what First Amendment rights do teachers have inside the classroom to share their perspective and their opinion of something? And it's actually fairly limited and what they can give as far as their opinion and their perspective, because what they're there to do is to teach what is out there in a non-biased way. Now, is that pure
or that's
100%
the goal
happening all the time? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's the goal. And everybody, myself included, we all have our own opinions and our own bias and our own slant, even when we talk and in the way we phrase things and the way we use words. And so trying to get that bias out of that instruction becomes a challenge. And for many of us, it's an unconscious bias, and teachers are in the same regard. Even if they think they're teaching it in an unbiased manner, they may have an unconscious bias that they're leaning towards.
One of the things I think would be interesting, not that you want to start this because there could be fires in your parking lot, do a sample of the bumper stickers that are on the cars. Then get the other perspective.
You know, the great
if it leans left, get one that says right. If it says, you know, polka dots, get one that says stripes. And have a couple of cars that have those on it and see what the chatter is in the teachers' classrooms, in the hallways, in the meetings, in the teacher's room. And just see if there's, undoubtedly there would be.
So I'm going to ask an interesting question, and this is a little bit off topic. I understand your point.
That's what the show is today.
Yeah. However, have you noticed, you know, I think back when I was a kid, and probably 3 out of every 5 cars had a bumper sticker. I don't think it's that way anymore. And it just made me think about that.
Not as many, but those that do have seem to have an outbreak. It's kind of like measles.
Oh, yeah.
If you get it, you've got at least 5.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you don't.
Yeah, I think I've got one, and I think it says, this dent was my wife's fault. I hope she's not listening.
Oh, you know, her friends are.
That's not true.
So what is dish duty like at your house?
Oh, shoot. That's right before Christmas. That's not good duty.
Yeah, yeah. That was not good timing. Good comment, not good timing. Yeah. Well, and yeah, I'd say you'd be up the creek, but you are already, so that's kind of redundant, huh?
Absolutely.
You might not have that paddle, though.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I got an interesting email this morning as I was reading in Cal Matters. So my son is CSU. You know what they just came out with last night? All students by February must have the booster.
Have to have the, yeah.
Yep.
We'll talk about that one, too, when we come back. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. Fred, so if parents want to know what's going on in the classroom, how do they really know? I mean, short of having the cameras, and I guess, yeah, I was never a big fan of the cameras in the classroom, but I would think for insurance purposes, liability issues. If there was ever a physical altercation in a classroom or claimed to have something in the classroom, you know, you hear those stories that they're going on, or the attempts at lawsuits and settlements that are going on throughout the country. You'd want them in the hallways. You'd want them in the classrooms. You know, you can't have them in the locker rooms, obviously, but you would have more assigned monitoring by adults of all this stuff. Just you know, to protect your backside as much as having the information readily available if a parent or a community group or somebody starts making some claims.
Well, I'm going to hit your first question first. How, as a parent, how do you find out what's going on in the classroom? So two responses to that. The first one is our parents had the best opportunity to see what happens inside classrooms last year. That's one of the positive side impacts of COVID and remote instruction. Parents had the opportunity to see every day exactly what a teacher was teaching and what was inside that classroom.
If they were at home.
So if they were at home, yes. But they didn't have to be at home. They could log in from anywhere just about.
So then, and monitor what was...
Yeah, absolutely. There's parents in the background all the time. All the time. Parents generally didn't log in on their own, but they're around all the time when their kids are there. The second thing I would say, now that we're not doing the remote instruction anymore, other than for those parents who have opted for the independent study, which we have a group of 150 or so in our district who have
5%?
Opted.
10%?
Yeah, about 5%. Little less than 5%, and you know, because we're 3,600 students. So... So the next thing I would say, the best thing, you talk to your children. I mean, that's how I find out what's happening in my children's classroom, is talking to them and having the conversations, you know. My favorite question
Would you tell your folks everything that was going on or selected highlights when you were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, of course it's selected highlights, but the selected highlights are generally around the curriculum that's being taught. The things that our kids aren't always telling us, at least in my experience as a parent, is some of the more personal things to them. What a teacher is teaching inside of a classroom is generally not a personal thing to a child that they're going to have a hard time expressing to a parent, depending on your relationship with your child. But I would always encourage parents, talk to your children, ask those questions. You know, I started to say my favorite question to ask my children is not what did you learn today or what did you do today? What is your favorite thing you learned today? And what is your least favorite thing you did? Because if you ask that very specific question, you'll get a very specific answer as opposed to how was school today? Fine. And then it's off, and then get off with a one-word answer. But if you have that very leading question that's very specific, they can't cheat and get off with a one-word answer.
It's like an open-ended or closed-ended question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I would encourage parents to engage into that conversation. Now, there's those dark years in middle school where that conversation is really awkward. You know, we all know that. I have a middle schooler right now, and middle school. And I even, you know, take that even one step further. My wife's a middle school teacher. And so, wow, kudos to the middle school teachers. Those are some times for
children.
Same
school?
No. We specifically
Good move.
Put our daughter in a different school, yes. Give her a little bit of freedom.
Yeah, but people know people.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah. So how do you allay the fears of a lot of us, whether we have school-age kids or school-age grandkids, as we're hearing all this stuff that's going on throughout the country, and say, well, you know, maybe that school district, but here are the steps we've done. Here's what we do on an ongoing, daily, weekly basis in our classroom to make sure that isn't the case. You're not going to find out those stories. You're not going to see or have your students share with you this kind of stuff, whether it's racial or anything else, you know, that it's being presented, I guess, as the way that the parents through the school board want instead of the renegade concept.
So the best thing that we can do as an educational system, and I take a lot of pride in this for Eureka City Schools, is making sure that we hire and retain the right people. If we hire and retain the right people who have a passion for doing what's best for children, and I would say we're mostly there. I'm not going to come on and say we're 100% there, but I would certainly say we're mostly there. The teachers want to do what's best for children, and they don't impose their will on children. The one thing that I will say, that we definitely have the whole gamut of views of our teaching staff, from very conservative folks to very liberal folks in their own personal political beliefs. But what
can you ask that?
Can we? Oh, no, absolutely not. No.
So how do you know? Because I was going to ask, okay, at what ratio? I mean, you can say you've got a conservative and liberal, but if you've got 14 of one and one of the other.
I would argue it doesn't matter. What matters?
Shouldn't matter.
It doesn't matter as long as you hire the right people. Because that's why it's so important to hire the right people, because if it doesn't matter if you're conservative or liberal, if you can come in and teach fair and balanced, I sound like Fox News. That's not what it meant to be. But anyways, all joking aside, if you can be fair and balanced in the delivery of your curriculum and have as little unconscious bias in how you deliver it, that's what we need inside the classroom to allow children to make up their own mind. And so
I don't think that there's question about that, but I mean, let's make it political for a second. If you've got five or six cars that have got Trump stickers on it or MAGA in your parking lot, do you think that there's not going to be repercussions on those vehicles?
Well,
maybe, maybe not. But
yeah,
there's probably a stronger likelihood than if it was a Biden-Harris bumper sticker.
What I can say is cruising through our parking lots, which I do all the time because I visit our schools all the time, I can't think of, and I don't go driving through looking for bumper stickers, but I can't think of the, what was the outcropping you said on bumper stickers where one turns into 50?
Oh, the measles.
The measles, yeah, there you go. I can't think of one case of measles on our cars in our parking lots at all. And I think that's because our teachers recognize that that's not a good portrayal of who you are inside of a parking lot, because it's going to lead parents to think you're teaching children something that is plastered all over your car.
Yeah. Now, during the political season, obviously there's more engagement. Everybody talking about it. Do you send reminders?
Oh, absolutely. And so, like, here's an example of what a teacher can't do. During the like when we had the last presidential election, a teacher could not walk into the classroom with a vote for Biden or vote for Trump pin or shirt or have a sign like that inside their classroom.
So kind of like a polling station.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Or unless they had both sides?
Well, if it was part of the curriculum.
Three or four?
No, if it was part of the curriculum that they were teaching inside their classroom, like, for instance, government class, and they were talking about it, yes, they can have that there
sense.
And they can have
the
conversation. Yeah. But if they're in their woodshop class, no, that doesn't work. So, but here's the line. Like, for instance, a car, if you have one bumper sticker on your car and you park in the parking lot and it's not causing a disruption, it's not going to be an issue. If you have the measles on your car, to use your example, and you're parking in the district parking lot, that could turn into a problem. If you have the measles on your car and you're at Eureka High School and you park on J Street in the public area,
that's a public street.
That's public parking. Anybody can park there. It's when you cross that line of going onto the campus parking that it potentially could be a problem. But luckily, knock on some wood, that hasn't been a problem in the 10 years that I've been in Eureka City Schools.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:49. Final couple minutes this morning with Fred Van Fleck. So what's keeping you awake at night these days, other than whether or not Santa's going to show up?
Oh, man. My list of what's keeping me awake at night these days is so long. Where do I start? Is it
top of the list.
Top of the list, being the superintendent of two school districts, Eureka City Schools in South Bay, and working on the shared services agreement. That's one. Construction of a $30 million gym.
Yeah, but those are out of your hands now, right? I mean, the gym is, you've got your foreman, you've got your people taking care of that. You know, you just kind of look across the street every once in a while and
I wish it was that easy, but we don't have a foreman like that. We manage our own projects. And so that's one of the things, because it saves the taxpayers a percent. And so a percent of $30 million is a lot of money. And if we do in-house, and we've got the expertise to do it in-house.
But you're not doing it.
Absolutely. I am
You don't have your facilities manager doing it?
A facilities manager is a member of the team. CBO is a member of the team. Chief business official is a member of the team. And I'm a member of the team. The three of us are the managers of the project. Because remember, when I was down in the Central Valley, I was in the middle of a $150 million building program. And that's where I built my experience. And so it's enabled me to come here and relay that expertise. And you know what? My maintenance and operation, Charlie Bettini, and then also Paul Ziegler, my chief business official. They're fantastic and do a great job. But I'm still a member of that team, and so that keeps me up. And you have to notice, you'll like this one. If you look, when you drive by the gym, the concrete slab's down, 1,000 yards of concrete down there between the footings and that slab. It's about an acre. The size there, 40,000 square feet. An acre's 43,000 square feet. And up front there's a square that's like 25 by 25 or so. And we're going to cut the center of the court out of the existing gym. And so right there in the foyer, the center court from the existing gym will be put there with the logger that's in the foyer of the existing gym.
No dead spots on the floor?
No dead spots on the floor.
So it's not the right gym then.
Yes. So that's going to be kind of cool to get the E out of the existing gym. It'll allow some people to reminisce and do some of that sort of thing.
CR kind of did something comparable with the floor that's out, the wood floor that's out there. Came from Tennessee.
Oh, really?
It was the Volunteers floor when they remodeled.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Except for the center.
Right.
And it's like, you know, some of that kind of stuff. Well, Boston did that too.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Boston. Did that too,
right?
You know,
in
the gardens, yeah.
Well, I was at a Broncos football game over Thanksgiving, and we did the tour of the stadium, and they had the Denver Nuggets court there, and that's where the idea stemmed from. And we were just about ready to pour the concrete, and we're like, "Let's do this. This sounds like a good idea."
So, yeah, some of the history, and then you just have a plaque somewhere,
right?
Not in the center of the floor. That explains what it is, where it came from, and the history, and yeah.
And then we'll have the Athletic Hall of Fame inside there as well, and so there'll be some reminiscing that folks can do.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you.
See everybody tomorrow.